Joanna, do you ever wish you could definitively prove that you had the right opinions about movies?
Yeah, Neil, because I do have the right opinions about movies and television. Right, Dave?
No, because I'm more right about those things, and I demand trial by content.
Oh boy, what is trial by content?
Each week, we'll take on a huge question.
Each of us will bring a choice, and combined with listener submissions and your votes, we will come to a decision.
It's trial by content every Tuesday on Spotify, TheRinger.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Don't let Neil win.
Don't let Dave win.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local, wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
And welcome to Every Single Album, One Direction. I'm Nora Princiati. I'm here, as always, with Nathan Hubbard. Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm great. Do you know why?
I'm glad to hear it. Why?
We're going to talk about Taylor Swift on this podcast.
We're sick. We are sick. Okay, fine. We can talk about Taylor Swift. We are also going to talk about Take Me Home, which is One Direction's second album. And it was released on November 9th, 2012, which was just 9 days before the one-year anniversary of their debut album, Up All Night. And this is going to be a recurring theme, which is just the breakneck pace at which they were putting stuff out at this point. And we talked about it a little bit on the debut album episode, but it's really sort of kicking into that high gear here. And I'm curious, Nathan, if there's anything that you can come up with to compare the rate at which they were working to, just in terms of another band, another artist. I mean, the thing that comes to mind for me is Taylor in quarantine. However, it just doesn't really work because definitionally she was not touring the globe while coming up with Folklore and Evermore.
Right. She was not playing 123 shows between February and November, which is just an insane pace. I mean, they were playing a show every other day in that year. Now, in 2012, leading up to it, they hadn't played quite as many shows, but even that tour in 2012 was, you know, 50 plus shows. They played the 1-800 Ask Gary Amphitheater in Tampa. Which was like one of the biggest venues that they played on the whole tour. I don't know what happens what you need to ask Gary about, but those were some slim days. Anyway,
I'm scared to ask, what is 1-800 Ask Gary?
I don't know.
Was that like Ask Jeeves? Is that like the Florida version of Ask Jeeves?
I don't know. We got to ask Gary what the hell is going on there. But
I'm
I mean,
Googling
look,
it.
This band is working really at an unprecedented rate, right? You said like this album debuts at number one in the US. They are only the second group. Well, they're the latest group to have their first two albums start at number one after Danity Kane.
Incredible.
What happened to that group? My God. But that gives you a sense like the pace at which they're producing content is truly insane, because the first album did not come out in November of 2011 in the US. It came out in March of 2012. So here we are basically 8 months later, and we've got an entirely new album that's out, and the hysteria around this band is just building. We really haven't seen anything like it before. And while that seems terrific if you're a fan because you're being fed this content, behind the scenes, what we know is that you've got a bunch of young guys who have not been home yet and who are caught up in this whirlwind machine. And it is a machine because there are so many people, Nora, who worked on this album. They basically divided up into teams of people, SWAT teams working on these songs, and then they had to chase the boys down through 2012 to whatever hotel room they were in and get them to record. And this album, to a certain extent, feels like something that got cranked out as quickly as possible and was in service of building up the brand around these boys. Everything is 3 minutes to 3.5 minutes. These soaring chorus ideas, right? No less than 5 songwriters per song. How did this album feel to you in the moment versus today as we look back on it as part of the catalog?
So it's funny. In the moment, the song that I really clung to on this album when it came out was She's Not Afraid.
Great song. She's not afraid of all the attention. She's not afraid of running wild. How could she so afraid of falling in love?
Shocked me when I went back and was like, that was a bonus track?
Yeah.
Which I think speaks to the fact that, okay, I was a freshman in college in the US, right? So that is a different customer to be sinking her teeth into, you know, the 14th track that you would hear only if you had a bonus version or were listening online, or then we talked about in the debut album, where a lot of the concerns were, okay, can we dabble in some stuff that might break them in the US, but really have to stay true to the bread and butter of being appealing to mostly a European audience, because that's safer and we're more confident in that. This, as you said, and you can see it in, you know, the number of tour dates, the places they're playing O2 Arena, they play Madison Square Garden on the tour that supports this album. They played for the Queen of England. This is an album where all of that branding and all of that sort of production and support of the machine is for a machine that is global, that is massive.
We got a Pepsi commercial.
Come on, kid. I'm Drew Brees.
And I'm Harry.
Who?
From One Direction. Platinum album.
Dudes won the Super Bowl.
On the cover.
MVP.
Oh, yeah?
We got Our Moment Perfume coming out.
Hey guys. So today I'm going to be doing a review on the Our Moment One Direction Perfume. Yes, I have it. I purchased it.
I mean, we're just cranking out the corporatization. And for some reason,
do you think anybody's going to have Our Moment?
Oh, for sure. You can still get it online. Don't forget, right, it's one of 4 perfumes. There's
well,
that
I still have
moment.
A few vials of Wonderstruck.
Oh God,
clanking around in my room somewhere. So maybe
we should have
maybe
a smell
this is
off.
The start of a collection. By the way, 1-800-ASK-GARY is a lawyer and medical accident helpline.
Well, hopefully they called it after the snowmobile accident, but we'll get to that.
Okay. But I think that's a good place. Just the conversation we were just having is a good sort of way to frame our discussion of this album, because again, the floor and the ceiling are just so much higher when it comes to this second record than it was with Up All Night.
They know they have it, don't they? They're just cranking it into gear.
They know they have it. And in
how much blood can we get from the stone?
Right. And in some places, I'm going to argue that the fact that they knew they had it was kind of limiting, because there are places where it feels like they just said, okay, we have it, so let's do it again.
Right.
And you have to kind of dig and look for the places where they actually start to push themselves.
Interesting.
Okay, so I think that's sort of a good context setter for us. And we can get to our categories. Would you agree with me that Live While We're Young is the biggest hit on this album?
Yeah. Hey girl, I'm waiting on you. I'm waiting on you. Come on and let me sneak you out. It is. I mean, I say that like with chagrin, because it has, I mean, this thing rips off Should I Stay or Should I Go by The Clash. Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? It's hard for me across a number of the songs on this album to not see and hear the roots that were pulled up probably quickly and integrated into the Max Martin factory of good melodies to deliver for these boys as quickly as possible. So it was the biggest song. The fact that you got into She's Not Afraid tells me that there was a lot of dissemination of things further down this album outside of the singles. It did not do as well as a single as the singles from the first album did. And in fact, Kiss You was released and Little Things were released. I'm in love with you and all these little things. The Kiss You video did terrific, but these songs as singles didn't quite reach the heights of some of the songs from the last album. But I think it is Live While We're Young. Let me just say this. Are you bothered by all of the double entendre sexual innuendo lyrically across this album? I mean, like, I listen to this song, I'm like, hey, settle down, boys.
Aren't you supposed to have to say that, though? Like, isn't this sort of like a necessary stage in the life cycle of a boy,
right,
boy band made up of young adolescent men?
Budding fair men, point. Yes.
Youths.
Yeah, but look, the Kiss You video, they are still budding, aren't they? They're not,
yes, no,
their
they're
shirts
little,
off. They're not totally fully developed, you know, dudes yet. But this song, I mean, again, you got Kotecha, you got Falk, you got Yakub, like, who are the threesome who are going to do a ton of the production and writing across this album. They're going to be sort of the common thread with a bunch of others. This one feels like a continuation.
Those are the guys that Kotecha in particular was their vocal coach on the X Factor. Those guys all come out of the Max Martin school.
Yes.
And I want to just establish that, because this is the album where, I mean, I remember we talked about this with Taylor working with Nathan Chapman, that at a certain point, the initial collaborator group kind of gets stale. Mm. And you just have to outgrow the first life cycle.
Yeah.
I think there's some of that happening on this album, where those guys are still like the shepherds of a lot of this and know them the best and have such a pedigree. All of those Swedish
hit makers.
Right. And they have an idea. And so far it's worked really well. And I think there are a lot of places on this album where, to borrow a phrase I know you like to use a lot, they're getting to the edge of the forest in terms of how far that can take them.
Yeah, they get to a place where you can feel the guys themselves are pulling them musically into a different place. I mean, that the most of the extra stuff that wasn't on the original version of the album feels like these three guys throwing the boys a bone and working with them on songwriting. And we talked about this in the last episode, but one of the reasons why everybody says Max Martin is a master craftsman is he was able to teach the craft and had this long, you know, family tree of people underneath him who were also able to turn around and teach this craft. And coming into this, these five boys were not songwriters. They barely picked up and could play an instrument. It's really only Niall who understood that, how to play guitar at all. But they taught them. And the back part of this album feels a little bit like the outros of their songwriting process. And if nothing else, these guys end up being very important booster rockets that carried the precious payload into space before sort of burning out and falling back.
Okay, so you and I might actually be setting up for a little bit of an argument.
Great.
Later. But I hear you. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And they were definitely sort of the people who'd known them the longest and had the established relationships. And also, as you said, had that process and also had some, you know, big time people to call in. And now part of that is that a lot of songwriters and producers really, really wanted to work on this record based on the fact that the first one had been so successful. Yeah. But our guy Shellback shows up.
Yes,
in the
he
credits
does.
Of this album. Dr. Luke shows up in the credits of this album. Mm. And those are guys who still come out of that tree, but actually were more of the heavy hitters than some of the guys who, you know, I don't know that Shellback was necessarily going to be working on the X Factor before right. doing this. And that's how they got hooked up with Sabin.
Yeah.
So they get the bigger fish from the Max Martin pond on this, as well as a bunch of other people. But since we're talking about Live While We're Young, I do think it's a great song. I think it's really fun. I love listening to it. But I do think it's emblematic a little bit of both the fun of this album, but also its limitations, where tell me exactly how this is all that different from a lead single like What Makes You,
what
beautiful,
makes you beautiful,
except for the fact that I would argue it lacks a little bit of charm and wit.
Tonight,
and
let's get some.
And Live While We're Young.
Come on,
I suppose,
man.
It's fitting. Really, it fits their age range. And there's going to be a musician whose name rhymes with Ted Schmieren, who I don't think always fully understands that. So there's something to be said for that.
Yeah.
But it is the biggest song. I mean, as much as I remember really latching on to She's Not Afraid. And I think I really liked I Would initially,
really?
Too.
Really?
Oh my God. I still love that song.
I Would? Would he say he's in L-O-V-E? Well, if it was me,
then I would. What is wrong with you? It's so fun.
What's with all the spelling on this album? That's what bothers me about I Would. L-O-V-E.
Okay, well, so, and you can't
and
argue
rock
that
me,
with...
R-O-C-K. Like, what? Why are they spelling it out?
You can't argue this with, or I can't argue this with I Would, because it's not, that has other producers. The other thing about some of the sort of innuendo that pops up in some of these songs, particularly in Live While We're Young, and some of the stuff that they did with the Swedes, those guys do have a little bit of a track record of putting lines in songs that don't totally make sense. So I do think that you have to take it with a grain of salt. It's melody first for a reason.
Always. That's right. I mean, but Sabin helped write If You Seek Amy for Britney Spears. So maybe that's where all the spelling came from. I don't know.
You just like to spell. It's kind of cheeky. I think it fits them. I'm not upset by the spelling at all.
All right. But I would, what was it, the 27 tattoos thing? I mean, the boys
yeah,
start
it's
trying.
It's really funny.
they start trying to keep up with 27 Tattoos. They're still not fully tatted out. It's just Zayn and Harry in the video. They really in the Kiss You video. They haven't really started to fully turn their chests into canvases.
Yeah, although within a year, probably collectively, they were getting close.
Right.
Not individually though.
Right.
I can make a more fully throated argument for that song later on, but I do really like that song.
Okay.
Well then, since you've shared with me some of what is not your favorite, would you like to tell me what the best song on this album is, Nathan?
I would, and I can't. This is the hardest time I've had through our entire time podcasting together, making the call on what I really think is the best song in the album, because I actually think a lot of the stuff on here, excluding the bonus track stuff, which absolutely we can rock it into the sun, but that it's all like, it's all good. You know, there's nothing that like, I also don't think there's anything that's great. For me, it's something between Come On, Come On. Which, She's Not Afraid, and then They Don't Know About Us. Every kiss gets a little sweeter. It's those three songs, and I'm really having a hard time picking between the three. Where did you come down?
I will pick for you. It is They Don't Know About Us.
Okay. Okay.
I think it is far and away the best song on this album. It is also my favorite song on this album. It
also sounds like Dick in a Box. It's my in a box.
God.
It does. Okay. And look, the Louis part in the bridge is tough and kind of weak. And then Zayn kills it coming out of the bridge. And I get uncomfortable with the difference between those vocal performances. But I mean, I'm telling you, this is the Saturday Night Live sketch.
I think I might quit this podcast right now. I love this song. This song is so special to me. You've ruined it. You've completely ruined it.
I still love the song. It's a great sketch.
Oh, man.
It's They Don't Know About Us.
This is tough. This is tough. Okay. I'm going to try to carry on. First of all, I think the fact that they are able to return to using, at least in some cases, some sparser instrumentation on this album is really, really promising and ends up being very, very valuable. Because that first album, and a lot of the second, but that whole first album, for the most part, you are getting wall of sound
wall
after
of
uninterrupted wall of sound.
Synths and then power guitar to cover up the fact that everything else is synths. Yeah.
Totally. And a little twinkly piano, something that's really, really sweet, but a little bit more restrained, ends up being important because, and we talked about this with the Ed Sheeran's stuff from the first album, the fact that they could make small sounding things really, really big is a skill that this band has that I don't think anybody knew they had when the first album was being created. And maybe at this point too, right? Because it's not as though this was a single.
Right.
And
should have been.
The fact that they start to be able to do that more and more often, I think ends up being really, really important and carries through to some of what will be my favorite songs in future albums. But they're able to do that on the verses when it's a little bit less supported by just like thick walls of sound. And then something about the mix on the chorus to me where they're all singing and they're all harmonizing, it really, really gets it right.
Yeah. Just to find a love to feel this right.
the other thing is, this is a song that feels age appropriate to me. And that's not like a, you know, pearl clutching statement, but you want to believe it, right? Like, you want to believe it when anybody's singing anything, when anybody's putting whatever they're putting in front of you in front of you. Yeah. And the idea of being young and in love and feeling like, why don't people understand that this is the most meaningful thing I've ever felt? And I'm not just a kid, and you're never going to get it, mom.
Right.
Is a really authentic feeling. And I buy it from them. And I think that's important too.
Yeah. It also is a nice little sort of thing for the fan base too. Like, they don't know about us, right? People who didn't understand the phenomenon.
Totally.
I do want to say, give a few shout outs though. Like, Summer Love is a really good song. And they all get a writing credit on it. The chorus sounds like Don Henley singing The Boys of Summer to me. It sounds like very Eagles, and it that's got to be the inspiration. Especially with some of the Harry and Zane stuff here. But at least it's crafted in a little bit of a break from the cookie cutter stuff on the rest of the album. It is a totally different song from I Want, but it had the same effect for me, which was, oh, this is something different than what by song 13 has become a homogenous set of songs that have a lot of the same melodies and you could convince me are all the same song if I squint, you know.
Totally. Enough. And there's good writing on that song. There's lyrics that I like and remember on that song. It's also another one where I totally buy the story. And it feels like something that was building to them spreading their wings a little bit more as songwriters.
I mean, just to return to Come On, Come On. I mean, there's a lot of 80s rock. We talked about Don Henley / Eagle stuff. Come On, Come On. The chorus sounds like Love Bites by Def Leppard to me. And it's the start of, not the start, it is the continuation of, look, I love it. I love that these guys found this niche, but their songwriters were pulling from a lot of back catalog for me, right? Rock Me, which is a great song. But it's totally, definitely a ripoff of We Will Rock You by Queen. Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. And this is the problem with copyright law, like rock music generally being out of ideas. Like, maybe we can't prove it, but, you know, as they said, come on, come on. Like, Dr. Luke is in on this production. This feels like it was lifted. I love the song, but to your point, like, sometimes they say some weird shit, like heavy metal, Show Me You Care. I want you to hit the pedal, heavy metal, show me you care. Like, what? Heavy metal music is not about caring for other people. Like, what? I don't know. They're not the highly crafted lyricists that we might have reviewed in some other seasons.
Well, I mean, nor do I think they particularly care to be.
Yeah.
Frankly, like, they're incredibly open about the fact that they come up with a catchy melody first. They come up with a hook first. If anything, they look for sort of like a groove and a beat second. And then, I don't know, let's make alphabet soup and throw in some syllables that work.
Yeah.
And it seems like no mistake, given that those were the guys who had the longest track records with them, that it takes until later in the album where it does seem like some of the stuff where there was allowed to be a little bit more craftsmanship and just a greater emphasis on other elements of creating a song that gets to come through a little bit. To your point about the copyright thing, Live While We're Young literally has like one note different than The Clash.
Yeah.
Which one has to imagine that was a let's not get sued decision. which
it
happens. But yes, there are some pretty
sprinkled
close
throughout the rest. Like on Kiss You, there's a lot of the Life is a Highway, Tom Cochran, and then later Rascal Flatts stuff in the guitar. Heart Attack has pretty heavy duty Miley Cyrus Party in the USA vibes for me. And I'm like, never thought it hurt so bad. Getting over you. You're giving me a
heart attack. Looking like you do. Yep. So I put my hand.
And never mind that Niall singing the ows throughout the entire song is so awesome. He's
it's
like popping up like a little leprechaun singing the ows through that whole song, but it's great. But and then there are a few other places where you feel like, I feel like I've heard this before. Back for You. It's Kelly Clarkson, Since You've Been Gone. Here's the thing, we started out friends. It was cool, but it was all pretend. But the start is Head Over Heels by the Go-Go's, that little guitar thing.
Loved You First, I Get Raise Your Glass by Pink.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so there you go. I mean, it's sort of all over this album where, and you understand the creative process was, holy shit, this thing is huge. We have got to take advantage of it while they're still young, pardon the pun, and pull as much out of this fan base and this band as we possibly can. Therefore, we need an album. Therefore, everybody bring your ideas. And in a crunch period of time like that, it's just impossible not to think that people are going to pull from past experiences, things they've overlooked at, right? Like nobody compares. I mean, they use You're Tearing Up My Heart. Like, we've heard that on a boy band before. And if you're going to steal the Sinead O'Connor Prince idea of the chorus, you better kill it. And you know, they don't really, right? Because nothing compares. Nothing compares to you. Truly, Madly, Deeply is Hey There, Delilah. Should I put coffee and granola on a tray in bed and wake you up with all the words that I still haven't said? Hey there, Delilah, what's it like in New York City? I'm 1,000 miles away, but girl, tonight you look so pretty. And they stole the Savage Garden song title. It's like, get the fuck out of here. We're not fooled. Magic is like recycled. Live While We're Young, it's got Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. Like, how does Sting feel sitting here? Like, everything, I don't know. There, you can see then this animosity that starts to build up, which we'll talk about because they actually have some spats with some other bands who kind of take some shots at them, including like some legit indie rock artists who look at their stuff and start to say, this is sort of processed and we've heard it before and nobody's getting the credit. Speaking of which, there's some Ed Sheeran on this album, and it sounds like you have thoughts about it.
Aye. Well, shall we talk about collaborators? Because I feel like that's going to be a big piece of this.
Okay.
And we can talk about Ed in that respect. I'll say as precursor, I am very clear that They Don't Know About Us is my best song in this album.
Okay.
The B tier of songs that I love is okay. I Would, Heart Attack, She's Not Afraid.
Okay.
Come On, Come On.
Yeah.
Summer Love. I would put Live While We're Young up there. It just has good energy. And I love Irresistible.
What? It makes your lips so kissable
and your kiss unmissable. I love Irresistible.
No.
Yes.
It's like a weird game of rock, paper, scissors. Do eyes beat lips? Lips beat fingers? Fingers beat eyes? Like what?
That's I totally adore about. That song. I feel like that song is a bridge that they needed to get to Story of My Life, which is like one of my top five One Direction songs. The story of my life, I take her home, I drive all night
to keep her warm in time. Okay. It got stuck sort of at the end of the expanded thing. It does feel like, so it's a bridge for you. It's sort of their rough draft that they tore up and left on the floor as they were getting in that direction. I can
yes,
live with
but
that.
I think the melodies are really pretty. I think it's subtle. And I think the call and answer at the end is really, really compelling. It really gets me in my feels.
Interesting. So give us Collaborator, because I'm holding okay. off on the Ed Sheeran questions for you. I need to know.
Okay. Okay. Well, so we've talked about Sovereign and the Swedes, right?
The Swedes.
So let's group the Swedes.
Yeah.
And they are responsible for, in varying combinations, Live While We're Young, Kiss You, Last First Kiss, Heart Attack, Change My Mind, Back for You.
Mm.
And that's kind of, nobody compares Still the One. Then, because there was, so they brought in the, you know, the Shellbacks and the heavy hitters from that group. But there was also just, as I said earlier, a lot of competition to get on this record. And two of the people who ended up succeeding in that were a pair of guys named Julian Bonetta and John Ryan. Two American guys who had done some work with the US version of The X Factor and pitched Come On, Come On to be on this album. And on the strength of that song, got to come over and do a little work and craft a few more songs for the band.
In the Sweden and song camp. Melody camp.
In Melody camp. They got to go to Melody camp. And they also ended up doing I Would, They Don't Know About Us, She's Not Afraid, and Loved You First, either yeah. as writers, producers, or both. And that is a pretty close list to what I just said were a lot of my favorite songs.
I see.
On this album. And I think I don't want to discredit the Melody Camp band leaders for their work here, because they were the ones who knew the guys and still guided a lot of the biggest stuff here. But I think that some of the fresh ears and those two, Julian Bonetta and John Ryan in particular,
right.
seem to have understood where they could go that was a little bit different from where they'd been before. I think those songs have more going on dynamically. They're a little bit less attached to those just like huge walls of sound all the time. I want to talk about Come On, Come On because I think it's a great song. And they had the piano on They Don't Know About Us. People say we shouldn't be together. And they do end up being two of the main collaborators with the guys going forward. One, because they did really good work. Also, because they were a little bit younger and earlier on in their careers, and they could actually go on the road
yeah.
with the band. And they could just like camp out and go hotel to hotel and city to city and grab 30 minutes in a hotel room with mattresses pushed up against the walls to influence the sound and make it okay to record in some random hotel room when guys like Sovin had families and weren't able to do that. So they didn't collaborate on the bulk of this record, but I would argue that they are the most important collaborators because I think on the whole, they did the best work. And I also think that they found a way to like start pushing it forward a little bit on an album where I would say its greatest weakness is that it just doesn't, it often doesn't advance on the previous album really at all.
Well, I agree with you on the last point. I had the Swedish Melody Mafia. although Sovin is not Swedish, but he studied under the Swedes. Carl Falk right. and Rami Yacoub. I had them just because I think churning out two albums like this in a year with a band constantly on the road is damn near impossible. And somebody has to sort of herd the cats on that. And under the pressure of an album that really, as you described in the last episode, was not originally made for the US, to then have to follow it up under the, you know, burning hot light of the internet and a fan base that was similarly on fire is not an easy task at all. So I gave it to them as their most important collaborator, but it sounds like you did not give it to Ed Sheeran.
No, absolutely not. So Ed Sheeran wrote Little Things and Over Again. Little Things being the song of the two that was, you know, it's at the top of the record. It comes right after Kiss You in that third spot, which is sort of like, okay, we think this is a big song. Yeah. I cannot stand it.
Why?
First of all, if I'm saying that I don't have all that much of an issue with the slightly provocative lyrics in Live While We're Young, the entire construction of a song around the idea of, oh, all these things that you hate about yourself are actually why I love you is so barfy to me.
I've never loved your stomach or your thighs, the dimples in your back at the bottom of your spine, but I'll love them endlessly.
I really cannot get over it. It actually makes me physically ill.
Yeah, I mean, we're tiptoeing around some body image issues in front of a lot of young girls on this song.
It's so weird.
And it's also,
it's like half of them like really don't even probably know that like dimples on your back are supposed to be a thing that you're worried about. Second of all, it would be cringy if a 50-year-old saying this, but like, well, they're way really too young for that. It doesn't make any sense. It is so weird. Ah.
All right. But my thing about all these Ed Sheeran songs is that they sound like Ed Sheeran songs.
Correct.
It's impossible to divorce it from the writer. Ed loves to jam all these words and cadences. Like, that is great. It's Ed. But like, this is only acceptable, I guess, in that this started as a cover band, and so maybe it feels better that they're playing effectively a cover song on this. I don't know. I mean, that look, when they go on the road, they're playing some cover songs. They played One Way or Another. They played Teenage Dirtbag.
And she doesn't give a damn.
Maybe this passes as them covering some Ed Sheeran songs, who, you know, was a huge star in the moment. I like Over Again.
I don't mind Over Again. I don't know that I love it.
The chorus is good. I mean, again, Louis at the end of the second verse, yikes, it's not great.
I can make your tears fall down like the showers that are pretty. Whether we're together or apart, we can both remove the masks and admit we regret it from the start.
But the outro is like a musical. Like the song is, it like the progression is like B, G, D, A. And then right at the end of the song, at like the 2:30 mark or something, they do this drop down that feels a lot like something you do at the end of a Broadway song, where they then drop to G, A, B, and then down to the F sharp. And I love that outro. It's awesome. they sing the "If You're Pretending" from the start stuff over it. So yeah. I enjoyed the way that that song was crafted. It feels a little bit different and a departure from the, you know, plastic pop stuff that we got across the rest of the album. I just can't get out of, hey, this is an Ed Sheeran song. Now, I'm saying that after I've just gone through a bunch of the other songs and said, well, this sounds like a Don Henley song. Well, this sounds like a Katy Perry, or, you know, or this is a Kelly Clarkson song, and this is a Queen song. This is a Clash. And the truth is, they are those songs that they're being pulled from. So to a certain extent, I don't mind that they're just effectively covering song here, but the Ed stuff, I'm ready for the Ed stuff to stop. It's kind of how you feel about the Taylor and Ed collaboration.
I am not the world's biggest Ed Sheeran fan. I just should probably, except in certain instances where I love some of his songs. I don't know. But yes, I don't know that. I think Ed Sheeran must be really nice and really fun to hang out with and a smart guy and a cool guy to collaborate
with. All those
with.
Things are true.
Because it seems like a lot of people really want to do it. I just don't think that what he does, because it's so specific, I don't think it always transfers.
That's right.
Over as well as it seems like it might.
I think you're right.
But
he is
at
the peak
like
of his powers in this moment. Yes, he's at the peak of his powers in this moment. And I think he's a fellow countryman and they're looking at him.
And he is a fellow countryman, which means he has no excuse for being Swedish for "hole in the middle of my heart like a polo."
Hole in the middle of my heart like a polo.
What are we doing?
We're Ed Sheeraning. We're Sheeraning. I mean, I think a thing of note about all of these songs that gets lost, like if we contextualize them in terms of what's happening in the music business, right? This is the slow start of the digital streaming age. And right. While these singles come out and they're not, these songs come out and they're not number one hits, they're not selling physically more than anything. Although we should add that the DVD that they put out in 2012 sold more copies in its first week than John Mayer's album did, which is pretty eye-popping and just another great poop on John Mayer moment. Their DVD outsold what was the number one album in John Mayer. Yeah, tough scene. But I think the reason that you heard "They Don't Know About Us" is because all of this stuff was streaming. And so it was much more easy to discover. And I mean, that's why, you know, "Live While We're Young" wasn't a number one single, but it was a number one digital song. And this is a fan base that's inherently embedded in the internet. They streamed this album for a week before it came out on iTunes. So they really were testing the limits on the digital side. And it had the effect of broader discovery of these songs in ways that for the Backstreet Boys and these other sort of what we would argue were vessels for other people's feelings in the form of a boy band or a female, girl band, we really only remembered those singles that were pushed hard at radio. Because of the technology moment that we're in, there's pretty broad discovery of the catalog here.
Right. No, it made it really easy to get to those deep cuts, which is good. Because I think there's really some more than worthwhile stuff there. And it helps being able to access that if you're feeling like, okay, I hear this first single and it's fun and it's peppy and I'm happy to listen to it. But what are these guys offering that they haven't already offered before?
Right.
Some of that, by the way, was intentional. Like Sovin's spoken pretty openly about having the idea that you do the first two albums kind of as the same thing. You're kind of trying to offer people what they're used to.
Yeah.
And then you switch for the third one. I do think that particularly, maybe it has something to do with how quickly they came back to back. There's just something about, okay, we're doing a lot of one thing here, which is why I feel like they had
a short period of time. Yeah.
Right. To the end of the forest. But it's not as though that was totally accidental. A lot of that was entirely intentional.
Yeah. And by the way, those are rules for when we are making a band and crafting it and shaping the clay, you know, as opposed to, hey, this is an artist who's developing naturally, right? I mean, what's interesting here, this band as the precursor to BTS is a pretty interesting case study for me. And I know we'll talk more about this as we get through it, but in a lot of ways, BTS is sort of treated as an employee, a bunch of employees right now, and thought of that way as sort of the larger HYBE, you know, hype machine. Here, it's somewhere in between, isn't it? I mean, the boys are being worked like they're employees. They probably don't know any better. They have all the enthusiasm and energy. They all come from modest upbringings where their parents, I think, were just happy to have suddenly. I mean, this tour made, you know, $120 million plus.
Right.
That's a shitload of money. 18 months after they left the house to go audition for some TV show, and Harry walks out of the bakery, right?
Right. Well, I mean, you see, like, in the movie, Liam's mom buys the cardboard cutout Liam at one of their tour dates. And it's sort of a joke, but it's a little bit like, I'm going to bring my son home, except that it's a cardboard cutout of him in a green polo with shaggy hair.
I always believed that Liam would make it, but never we speak. Never in my wildest dreams would I think he could speak. He goes away for so long. Sorry.
Yeah.
And it's just going to sit there until, you know, however many months later he's actually able to get a day off and take a breath. So it's pretty intense.
Yeah, there's something sad about the underlying assumption with which it appears most of these business decisions were made is that this is not going to last. It's almost like there was a predetermination that it couldn't go on forever, so we have to go as fast and do as much as possible. And they may have been right about that, okay? But there is a little bit of tragedy underneath it, because you know that in the grand scheme of time and history of music, this is going to be a fairly episodic, short, ephemeral, fleeting moment.
But also an incredibly prolific one. And I don't put this on the songwriters and producers necessarily so much, because first of all, the patterns and the established conventions that they were following had worked in a lot of cases, and in a lot of ways worked in this case. But in a strange way, I feel like they were underestimated on this record, because they're probably not, to the extent that some of these guys become fully formed as songwriters, they're probably not there yet. But I think you can hear them trying. You can sort of hear them taking the steps later on. And I don't know that that was really the goal. It just seems like sometimes there's this idea where it's like, oh, we're going to churn out another one of the last one, and why would we even try to do something else? That's why I sort of highlight the partnership with Julian Bonetta and John Ryan, because it seems like there was a freshness there and just an understanding that it could go to a different place. But I may be being too generous, but we'll find out.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local, wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Look, there was some staleness on this album, especially in the bonus tracks, I would say. So what would we have cut?
Well, I would cut Little Things.
I won't let these little things slip out of my mouth.
Holy shit!
I would cut it and blast it into the sun.
Really? You surely you see the functionality of that song.
It makes me ill.
Oh.
That's how
damn.
It functions.
Do you think you're, like, what percentage of the fan base do you think would agree with you on this? We're
probably a
out.
Small percentage, but.
That is a hot take.
Also, by the way, just so that we can have like a little bit of a nice moment between the two of us before we fight to the death about this song. I want to go on record. I should have kissed you slaps.
Yeah,
that is such a good song. You were so right.
Thank you very much.
So right. I went back with fresh ears and it just like really blew my mind. So
I appreciate
hats off to you, Nathan Hubbard. Now, listen, I reiterate, Little Things is terrible.
I'm not gonna like argue for Little Things. In the line that makes me the sickest comes from Little Things, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I just think it serves a purpose, and the only other options for that, like, let's slow it way to baby girl, you know, slow it way down ballad shit, it is basically the Ed Sheeran songs, and those didn't work because they're Ed Sheeran songs. So
I truly would take Irresistible in that place on the album.
If it makes you feel
times
better,
out of 12.
Okay, well, you're crazy, but if it makes you feel better, by the time they get to stadiums, they drop Little Things from the set list because they have some other things that can work as ballads, including one that you alluded to earlier.
Well, and because they didn't want people to have to clean up the throw up.
Yeah, fine. Would you keep all these bonus tracks, Nobody Compares, Truly, Madly, Deeply, Magic? I guess you'd keep Irresistible. I would have shot all that shit into the sun.
I don't really need Still the One.
I was so stupid for letting you go.
Although I have a theory, because some of the guys, including Harry, get writing credits on this, and Harry just like absolutely loves Shania Twain.
Yeah.
It's still the one that I love, the only one I dream of.
Well, and
I think that might
seems
have something
to
do with it.
I do too. I mean, Harry, Liam, and Louis get a writing credit on Still the One, but I think Nobody Compares, Still the One, Truly, Madly, Deeply, Magic, Irresistible. Get out. Get off my mountain.
I can part with Magic.
You want to swap Irresistible and Little Things, and you would cut some of these.
Yeah, like, and I could definitely part with Magic, and that's totally fine. I do think Louis and Niall have some very pretty harmonies on the bridge of Truly, Madly, Deeply.
Might not mean that much to you, but to me it's everything.
It's Hey There, Delilah.
That's okay. That's a nice song.
I'm not fooled by this. I'm not going to let you fool me into.
We know Louis likes that song.
All right. I mean, I honestly, I could part with Back for You. Only because of my, again, Kelly Clarkson. Kelly Clarkson!
No! Kelly Clarkson!
I'm into it. I think it's nice that it's kind of a fan tribute. I also think Zayn has the big, like, for you at the end of the bridge. That's nice.
Yeah, I am coming back.
See ya!
Everybody but Zayn gets a writing credit here, though.
True.
There's a little bit of space emerging. All right. Well, this is a moment where we really need to get into a very important thing from this era. And that's under the headline of P. Carey. But I guess I want to hear what your P. Carey is.
So my P. Carey is the bridge in Come On, Come On. Which I
really?
Just adore. Yeah, totally.
I mean, I like his vocal in the pre-chorus of Change My Mind. Never found like this before. Are we friends or are we more? He gets a lot of finishing lines. He's really sort of rapidly becoming the closer. Let me kiss you.
He's the closer, and he also gets all the lines that are like, that have kiss.
Yes. Yeah, all of the like stare you down,
it's
girl.
Not
like,
fair.
Live while we're young. At the end of Over Again, he's the voice. But like, he is becoming the closer of the group. And I can't believe that your P. Carey moment is not that he began dating Taylor Swift in late 2012 when
True.
This album comes out.
By the looks of it, Harry Styles is the next guy Taylor Swift could potentially pen a new song about. The One Direction member and the country gal were spotted together at NYC's Central Park Zoo Sunday afternoon.
And that they break up in early 2013. He's 18 years old. She's 23. Supposedly the Temper Trap song lyrics that are wrongly tattooed on his arm. She actually gets the originals or assigned version of them that she didn't give to him because they broke up so quickly. They get in a giant snowmobile accident that is the subject of one of my favorite songs across the entire Taylor Swift canon, which is Out of the Woods. Mm-hmm. What else? How is this not P. Carey for you?
Well, I was going to bring it up. Don't worry. I wasn't going to let this go undiscussed. This is the era that brought us Sad Boat Girl, Taylor, leaving the vacation where they broke up in the Virgin Islands. Just, I hate that she's ever had to feel sad at any point in her life, but it's an iconic image and we can all just acknowledge that. They went skiing with Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they went on a couple's trip to Park City. I think Taylor skied without a helmet, too, which is something that I really don't condone. But the Haler glory days were, they lived life on the edge.
They did. They lived while they were young. Look, my thing on this is, I really think Taylor got a lot of shit for this, right? This relationship. A, because he was a little bit younger. I mean, whatever.
Well, and Harry was actually, in an odd way,
Harry
got a lot
women.
Of shit for dating older women, too.
Harry likes older women. Let's be clear. This is not the last older woman that he's going to date. By the way, she's not
That's
old.
That's true.
She's 23. I mean, he's going to date a lot of older women. But, to each their own.
I think that discourse was, in moments, a little cringy when he was, like, really young. Although, to be fair, yes, it has borne itself out as something that seems not to have been manufactured. Although maybe some of the alleged relationships were not real. But anyway.
I just would say this relationship became a lightning rod for the Taylor recycles through dudes in short periods of time, can't keep a relationship down. And in fact, every now and then I have a little birdie about some of these things. And in fact, there are multiple little birdies who would say it was Harry who was not in a position to be in a relationship, which at this moment in time, as an 18-year-old, when he's a global superstar and he hasn't been home since, he was in the bakery and now of course he's not available. Like, that was a bad life decision to date this 18-year-old kid in that moment. But I think, in hindsight, it was Harry who was maybe moving very rapidly through relationships at this time and unable or unwilling to be in one sustainably. And in fact, if you track the Taylor Swift relationships after this one, she does seem to have a rethink and get into more longer-term relationships, finally ending in the one that she's in now. But for me, this is P. Carey because, there's nothing really bigger than dating a rock star in terms of elevating your own profile. And it's quite a hairy moment.
Right. I think, look, there's a messy nexus of celebrity and real relationships, but the fact of the matter is this was the most famous person that a member of One Direction had been publicly associated with. And that has an effect. A very famous date at the Central Park Zoo cannot go uncommented on.
Right. In the fall clothing. We just don't know enough about this snowmobile accident, do we? There are some angel ER staff out there who kept it quiet. And it's like the only time in the history of the world that a famous person has gone to a hospital and it hasn't immediately been plastered across the front page of TMZ, right?
Yeah, totally.
Somebody did them right.
Pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it was incredible at the time. And someday we'll get a better story around that for those who are ridiculously curious. But there is a wonderful arc from this moment. Fast forward to the Grammys in 2021, when they're seen as after Taylor wins the Grammy for Folklore, Harry's there for Fine Line. And there was what appeared to be a very friendly conversation between them happening that certainly put to rest any sense that while this relationship ended and there were feelings on both sides, the animosity did not carry over roughly 9 years later.
I don't quite know what to make of this, but it has not gone unnoticed for me that both Harry Styles and soon Taylor Swift have songs called Carolina.
She's got a family in Carolina. So far away, but she says I remind her of home. Names that only Caroline.
Just food for thought. Just curious.
Okay.
Just something that I'm keeping my eye on. Watch this space, as they say.
Okay. Well, she's going to be a category throughout this journey. We're not there yet, though, because we have not even discussed Peak Louie. Now.
Okay.
Talk to me.
So I agree with you that there are still some shaky points for Louis on this record. However, it is the one I believe where he starts to kind of find his voice. He gets to start to Change My Mind, which is the first time that he's gotten to start a song.
The end of the night, we should say goodbye.
And then he has, after Liam gets to do the little like, go Tomo, go, in the background, he gets to sing one of the greatest lines on this entire album, which is, I can't compete with your boyfriend.
Yeah.
He's got 27 tattoos.
Yeah. Okay. There we go.
Because I can't compete with your boyfriend. He's got 27 tattoos.
He has zero tattoos at the moment, I think.
Well, that's why he can't.
Yeah.
What's he going to do about it?
I still struggle with some of the lyrical things. My peak, Louis, is that he just cannot hold his tongue ever, but especially on Twitter. And in this case, he gets into it with the guys from The Wanted. And in this case, RIP Tom, who passed away sadly recently, but he goes after Tom on Twitter. But it started because Louis got caught making fun of Jake Bug for going to The Wanted. We get nip slip references from the girlfriends. We get our first reference to Larry. We get Zane calling Max George chlamydia boy. There's all kinds of things happening on Twitter with Louis.
Yeah, well, and the thing with The Wanted and with Tom Parker's passing, which is obviously incredibly sad. Did they end up having the career that One Direction had? No, but they were initially kind of the positioned rival. And that was because they had some really good songs and they didn't end up having the depth of the catalog. But I listened to Glad You Came over and over again at one point.
Away from us, so stay. Stay with me, I can make you glad you came.
And you don't end up in a Twitter feud if there's nothing to feud about, right? And so I guess we can just take that as sort of evidence of a boy band life well-lived. I do think that some of Zane's particular choices of phrase here rose to the level of high comedy.
Louis just cannot hold his tongue.
Louis is definitely, the pen over the sword type, because as
Love
he goes on to really be uncomfortable with a lot of the Larry Stylinson rumors is not even the right word, but yeah.
fan fiction,
just that whole fan fiction little corner of the internet. He tells you how he feels.
He does.
He does not tend to be afraid to throw a tweet out there. Yeah. And I respect that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think more harm than good, but I respect it as a behavioral choice.
We'll revisit the Larry stuff later on. But for now, peak Liam for you is what? You really taught me in the last episode. You changed my perspective on Liam. I need to understand in this moment, in this album, what's peak Liam?
Well, so my peak Liam here is much more trivial, although I do still believe that he's a real grounding force for them. But Liam just had excellent concert hijinks.
Okay.
Most notably, when they went on tour, playing at O2 Arena, he pulled Harry's pants down on stage.
Yes. It's astonishing that Harry's undergarment stayed up.
And that's a real danger. Like,
yeah.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, which is why I think that was an incredibly lucky moment.
I was going to ask you, you sure that one wasn't planned? Because, I mean, look, these guys really like to be in their underwear. Niall sings in his underwear. Harry gets
there's
pantsed.
A lot of stories from this era where Niall moons people. Niall seems to really enjoy.
Well, and he records in his boxers. Speaking of boxers, my peak Liam is that he live tweeted a girl breaking into his balcony in Australia and stealing his boxers. I mean, what? Nothing says more about how that platform, not that platform, but all of these digital social media platforms are screwing us up. It's like, dude, Liam, you need to run. There is a crazy Australian trying to break into your hotel room right now, and he's under the covers live tweeting it as she runs off with his red boxers.
Yeah, so he tweets, strangest way I've ever been woken up, when you're in bed butt naked and someone is trying to force open your balcony, this is going to be strange. Then he tweets, so happy I woke up, because that shit would have been so unfair. Then, somebody stole my boxers. I'm so embarrassed. Yeah. Then, so how this happened, I went in the sea in those, and the hotel staff put them outside to dry. Someone climbed on and stole them just to set the scenes.
I went in the sea.
Classic.
Nabokov.
But then the final one, he hashtags break into someone's house and steal their underwear day. Right. I'm off to Scarlett Johansson's house.
Perfect.
Incredible.
And who knows what he really is. He's an enigma, this guy.
He's a funny one.
Yeah. Speaking of enjoying the being in, he sleeps with no clothes on. He does a lot just in his boxers. That is Niall. We see him repeatedly recording his best vocal takes in his boxers. It's interesting that he doesn't have any concern showing off his knees, because my peak Niall is this guy really fucks up his knee. And it's a problem. He's a jock and a soccer fan, but he had to have knee surgery later on. But there's a moment in Toronto where Liam tackles him and definitely hurt him. The Liam stage hijinks took Niall down. And in some way, it's a problem. In others, like a lot of times, it keeps him out of that dreaded boy band pyramid where they all get on top of each other on stage and make a pyramid. A lot of times he's out of it because his knees can't hold it. He's like my 75-year-old father. He's like, oh, I'd like to come over, but my knees hurt. I'd love to get in the pyramid with you boys, but my trick knee's locked up. Anyway, this is going to be a problem. But like, I don't know. He's a little leprechaun with bad knees at 19 years old.
There's actually kind of a lot of knee injuries with these guys.
They're it's like sort the of Chiefs funny offensive and like they're line. All...
Right, like it's a little bit charming because they're just this silly, boisterous bunch that can't stop like running all over each other. There's a moment where Liam changes the lyrics and changed my mind to, as I walk towards the door, my knee hurts me even more, because during a concert, Louis is like sitting on a staircase because he can't move because his knee is hurt. And it's all very silly. At least that's how it sort of outwardly comes across. And they're really funny how they change lyrics to stuff too. Like, Niall does the baby if you say you want me to drive to KFC or a couple other locations. Or Louis would change the line and over again, I can make your tears fall down like the showers that are British, to different countries. I think the other one was in Little Things, you can't go to bed without your cup of tea. Sometimes he would say Susan Boyle's tea, or without raisins in your sheets. So they goofed around with that stuff like all the time. The only thing is, and look, teenage boys hurt themselves doing God knows what all the time. There is this little kernel of like,
wear and tear.
They were performing all the time and they weren't sleeping enough. And like, yeah, it's a little scary.
Yeah.
And it, particularly when you sort of know that when they got hurt, they just had to go perform the next day. Like,
yeah,
there wasn't a lot of, oh, we'll take a step back and let this happen. And again, it's hard to see a guy that age feeling like, oh, shoot, you know, I have to go sit in bed because my knee hurts. I'm sure in some of those instances, they at least didn't feel like they wanted to do that. But when you're sort of taking a bird's eye view, it's like, should an adult maybe have stepped in here?
There were no, their parents were at home like getting checks, I think. I don't know.
Right.
What's your peak Nile?
My peak Nile is the ows.
Yeah.
In Heart Attack.
Heart Attack. Yeah. So it's good. Pretty awesome. And I'm like, ow! Never thought it hurt so bad. Getting over you. You're giving me a heart attack. It's a great moment for him. It's really the most prominent he's been featured in a song to date. So good
and
for him.
And he just has, and it has so much personality. And I think that's really important.
Okay. Let's get on to peak Zane. Zane's getting engaged already.
Yeah. Yes.
What do we think of this? He's got, I mean, in the Kiss You video, there's some shots where he's now got like, he's got the skunk stripe going in the hair. He's really starting to do some Zane things.
Yeah. And it's already like, I think there's a, it might be Jimmy Kimmel they're on, and it might've been a little bit later than right when this album came out, but he's talking about being engaged, but they're sort of playing who's most likely to do XYZ. And one of the questions is who's most likely to disappear for a couple of days and have nobody hear from him. And everybody turns to Zane and right. It's just like, oh, it's you.
Which of you is most likely to disappear for a couple of days without contacting the others?
Right. So Perry Edwards is a singer-songwriter. She's in the girl group Little Mix, right? So she was in this relationship with Zane, and you just sort of get the sense that in all these boys' lives, like they suddenly hit fast forward. And like so many of these young stars, they have to grow up very, very quickly. And it feels like they grab on to whatever is around them. Now, this relationship does not last, does it? But
no. And it doesn't feel like they, when it speeds up, I don't know that you get a ton of the sense that there were people trying to slow it down to the extent that that was possible. And it never would have been totally possible. But we've had this conversation about Taylor Swift, right? Where can you do it? No, you can't actually make it happen. But in a lot of instances, there's real effort to let's try to manufacture normalcy as much as humanly possible. And you don't get the sense that that was happening very often.
No.
It seemed like, you know, celebrity relationships, ones like, and this is impossible to know the truth of, but like, did Harry date Nicole Scherzinger? I don't know.
Probably.
But even just the possibility that that was a sort of manufactured tabloid storyline,
I see.
Think speaks to the information universe that they were living in and just kind of the fact that the guardrails were not up.
Every time we talk about Zayn, I start to get sad. And, you know, big picture, he's here and it's, you know, it's all okay. But there's that scene in This Is Us where he's bought his mother a house. And again, it feels like in a lot of cases, these boys, you know, their parents, you know, they're almost the parents now in that they've had broader life experiences and their parents say as much in the doc.
Yeah.
They've had broader life experiences. There's very little that the parents feel like they can offer them. They're holding on to cardboard cutouts, almost like idol worshipery in its own way. And I say this not throwing stones at the parents, because I think the parents did the best that they possibly could, of course, but you just can't avoid it. It's the problem with young people becoming gods in the eyes of millions of fans, because you don't have much that's real around you. And so in this case, he's buying his mother a home. He doesn't really have parents who can help him anymore. He has this relationship with Perry. It's something that feels real. It's something that feels like he can hold on to. You can see how he just would hit the fast forward button and get engaged. Now, the good news is, you know, they didn't get married and they separated in 2015 later on. But this is the start of, it feels like Zayn holding on to something that to him feels consistent and sustainable and real.
Yeah, and maybe just a little sort of lost or just out of a ton of options to live life in a way that's sort of normal and grounded, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because even if, like, picture yourself as the parent of a kid in a situation like this, even if you knew what to say, which you sort of couldn't possibly, you're just not even there to say it 98% of the time. And I don't know. Sometimes I feel like we've had this conversation before. Sometimes it just seems like a miracle that anyone who's ever been in a situation like this gets out of it even moderately okay. Mm. And maybe that is to varying degrees true.
Yep.
But yeah, there's a lot of life that's happening in a pretty intense manner.
That said, the peak Zayn is his face in the One Way or Another video just before David Cameron comes out of 10 Downing Street when they're dancing. You have to see this thing to believe it. The video's made for comic relief. First of all, the video itself is ridiculous. They're like singing, "I'm gonna get you around a bunch of poor African kids in like rural areas of
it's really weird
of Africa.
It was
it's
a really
weird
choice.
But his face when he's, you know, quasi dancing is just tremendous.
Yeah. So that music video is strange. There was an idea behind it that was, I imagine, well intentioned.
Yes.
They were, instead of having a set and a fancy music video, they were going to give the money that they would have spent on those things to a charity that I believe helped educate kids in Africa.
Red Nose Day. Yeah, comic relief.
Yes. So then, but then they went and made the music video there with a bunch of the kids.
It doesn't look right.
And it was a little odd.
It doesn't look right.
It's just a little weird.
Yeah. Anyway, Zayn's face before they pull the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom out of his domicile is terrific. Did you have a peek?
Yeah, I just have that he owns the chorus of She's Not Afraid. Just like smashes it into the stratosphere. IMO. She's not afraid of all the attention.
She's not afraid of running wild. Well, I agree with you. I think he smashes a lot of this album.
Agreed.
I think we can fast forward through are any of these songs about Taylor Swift? Because we know that they had not started dating by the time this album was in the bag, right?
Correct. Okay. But this was where I was going to mention that things were percolating.
Okay.
Nothing important for March 25th.
Tiger Woods yet. Got back to number one in the world.
Very important. Got it.
Who won the album? So,
well, I was going to ask you.
I think it's Zayn. I think his voice stands out on this album. I think it was building on the last one. I do think Harry's being positioned to be heartthrob central. And what we know is that may be as much as Harry being cooperative, more cooperative than Zayn was around these things. But Zayn's voice and all of these the extent to which there are special vocal moments on the album, he is really starting to soar.
Yeah. So he starts Summer Love, Loved You First, Little Things, Come On, has the She's Not Afraid chorus, just crushes that I Want to Tell the World That You're Mine, Girl. That we talked about at the end of They Don't Know About Us.
Yes.
Also has all those gorgeous echoes on the last chorus of that song, which is another thing that I just absolutely love about it. I think on the first album, I still go to Liam just because I think he was the one who was sort of ready. By the time we get to this one, Zayn has some natural qualities to his voice that are the most impressive, I think, pretty clearly at this point. Yeah. And he just has a lot of the most sort of beautiful and I love the sound of that moments on the record.
Well, we're at the point where you tell me the swooniest lyric and I tell you the shittiest lyric. There's a lot of swoony shit on here, but it also could double as the shittiest shit. So what are we doing?
I'll go on your side to begin with.
Yes.
I do think that Niall should have taken legal action for having to sing the words drool down their chinny chins.
Yes.
I just want to show you up to all of my friends, making them drool down a chinny chin chin.
They actually, in fairness, they at least had a conversation about this. And they
Tell
were
me.
A little self-conscious about it. They at least identified it could be an issue. And they decided to go with it. And I think it fucking sucks.
All right. Well, I'll tell you something that I think is spectacular, which is my favorite lyric from Summer Love. Feels like snow in September, but I always will remember you were my summer love.
Feels like
that feels like a Taylor Swift song. That's why you like it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift writes great songs.
Yeah.
Great with analogy.
Okay. Look,
beautiful metaphor.
I actually did not think drool down their chinny chin chins. Like, I can get the sort of tongue in cheekness of that. And I think the way that Niall sells it in the video is actually redeeming of it. So I said it fucking sucks. I don't love it, but hey, at least they had a conversation. It was a choice. I think the shittiest lyric is, you never want to know how much you weigh. You still have to squeeze into your jeans, but you're perfect to me. Which Harry sings on
Horrible.
Little Things.
If you never want to know how much you weigh, you still have to squeeze into your jeans, but you're perfect to me.
I can't believe that was a thing that they decided to sing.
I'm actually like, I'm like uncomfortable that it's even going to be on our podcast. It's
you
the
still
worst
have
thing in the
to
world.
Squeeze into your jeans. What? What are you saying? Like, that's not a loving thing to say. It's not a thing to say.
It's also, this is really beside the point. Buy different pants.
Harry can afford it at this point.
Just,
I don't know. It's that was a big miss.
I agree.
I have a hard time, just to wrap up your episode really devoted to shaming Little Things. I really have a hard time with the song. I have a hard time with the album in some ways, because this was an important song that they put out there as like a strategy to be balladeers and crooners. And this thing stayed on there. Oh, Lord. Great it, woman. Here we are.
All right.
The end of a lovely journey. This is an interesting album, isn't it? Because I think that the quality of hooks across this album is really strong. And frankly, it's stronger front to back in some ways. The hook in the choruses are stronger than the first album.
Agreed. There are more songs that clear a higher bar on this one than the last one. If you grade it with a slightly more critical eye, which I think is fair, because one thing you want in a follow-up album is some growth, then I think it's fair to look at it and go, they were at the proverbial edge of the forest that we love to talk about.
Yeah.
I think that evens out for me, and it's a B.
Wow. I have B plus in my mind because now that's an upgrade from you from the last album.
Well, I ended up giving the last one a B.
Okay, so you did. So you went same. So we both went samesies for these first two albums. I just, again, I love I Should Have Kissed You so much on the last record that it's hard for me to like this one better. I like the hooks here better. I think I like the songs less overall, because that's where the entirety of the front-to-back songwriting, some of the lyrical choices, some of the recycled melodies, some of the lifting from songs from the 80s and 90s and 2000s that we've heard before, that all feels a little more manufactured to me, even though I understand that Up All Night was written in haste after these boys exploded. They were out touring singing cover songs, and you know, the band's management was like, we got to have real songs. Let's pull it together. There is a bit of haste in the synthetic nature of these songs in this album. For me, it's still a B plus because I can hum 8 of these songs in my head without thinking about it.
Totally. And then what also matters to me is that They Don't Know About Us is, I think, the first One Direction song that for me is one of those songs where it's just a really important song to me. It's just a song that I really, really love and am fully confident that I'm going to really, really love forever for the rest of my life. I just adore that song. And
it's my D in a box.
Oh my God, stop. You're ruining my life.
That's the way regardless, you do it.
Regardless. I will still love it forever. It is very important to me in a way that's a little closer to my heart than I think anything on the first album, though not as much as some of what is to come. This has been Every Single Album One Direction. I'm Nora Princiotti. He's Nathan Hubbard. We will be back next Monday with a look at One Direction's third album, Midnight Memories. As always, thank you to the spectacular Kaya McMullen for producing this episode. And thank you to you all for listening. We'll talk soon.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.